Forensic Investigations and Analysis. So until then, this is Chris Williamson saying bye for now.
Unity Week. Unity, secret behind the might of Islamic world. In the name of God, Salam and welcome to the program. The birth anniversary of Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, is the best opportunity to pay attention to his human building teachings. As you know, the birthday of the Seal of the Prophets has been mentioned in two dates. According to the Sunni Muslims, he was born on the 12th of the Islamic month of Rabiul Awwal, while Shia Muslims maintain that the Prophet was born on the 17th of the month. Anyway, the great leader of the Islamic Revolution and the reviver of Islam in the modern era, Imam Sayyid Ruhullah Musavi Khomeini, God's mercy upon him, named the time span between the two days as the Unity Week to unite Muslims of all denominations in the face of the sworn enemies. On December 29th, 1981, the Imam said, "We shout that we should all be together to have Unity Week. Our religion is the same. Our Quran is the same. And our Prophet is the same." Every year, upon the initiative of the Islamic Republic of Iran, the International Islamic Unity Conference is held in order to bring Muslim thinkers and researchers together. In 1990, Ayatollah Khamenei ordered the formation of the World Forum for Proximity of the Islamic Sects, enhancement of familiarity, awareness, and deepening of comprehension among the followers of the Islamic sects and bolstering of Islamic Brotherhood are among the goals of this forum. The biggest harm for Islamic communities is to turn differences into spite and hostility. The enemies of Islam have tried, since the time of the Prophet, to sow discord among Muslims in a bid to reach their unholy goals. In the advent of Islam, the Prophet tried to create unity and affection between those who were the inhabitants of Medina, Ansar or helpers, and the migrants, Muhajirin, who had migrated from Mecca to Medina. The Seal of the Prophets, as per the verses of the Noble Quran, called on Muslims to cling to the divine cord and avoid any discord and disunity. Thus, Muslims became a monolithic united nation, Ummah, who in many cases triumphed over enemies. Enemies, however, understood the mystery of Muslims' victories very soon. Hence, they left no stone unturned to cause rifts among the ranks of Muslims. As soon as a variety of narratives were put forward about the teachings of the Quran and the statements of the Prophet, differences increased among Muslims. The biggest blows have been dealt to Islam and Muslims with the same differences. The message of the Islamic Revolution, since day one, has been unity and solidarity. The Islamic Revolution has always emphasized on tolerance and refraining from animosity. Ayatollah Khamenei says in this regard, "One of the tools that have always been used by the enemies of Muslim nations is the issue of sectarian differences, Shia and Sunni and so on. They caused quarrel, create difference, cause brothers to fight with each other, magnify differences, highlight them, weaken commonalities and elements of unity, undermine them, magnify a petty thing, highlight it, trivialize so many commonalities between Sunni and Shia brothers, and weaken them. This is what has always been done. Now it is being done too." The message of the Islamic Revolution has always been unity. In fact, this revolution achieved victory through unity of all ethnicities and sects under the leadership of Imam Khomeini. In view of this, Imam Khomeini kept calling for unity and did his best to expand the pattern of unity among other Islamic nations. As the Imam would say, "Unity does not mean to put aside one's religion. Islamic unity means to converge around common strong points against common enemies." In view of the Imam, unity is the factor of power, and discord is the cause of weakness and annihilation. He used to warn that discord existing among Muslim nations has originated in either the betrayal of the leaders or their ignorance and unawareness. Imam Khomeini said that there is no Sunni and Shia, Arab and non-Arab in Islam. We are all brothers in Islam. In a society where people want to render services to Islam, such issues have no place. We should never cause differences. Once he said, the Shia and Sunni brothers should refrain from any difference. Today, difference among us is only to the benefit of those who believe in neither Shia sect nor Hanafi sect or other sects. They want neither this nor that to exist. They have found a way to create difference among you and us. We should pay attention to the fact that we are all Muslims and we are all the people of the Quran and the people of Tawhid, monotheism. And we should make effort to render service for the Quran and Tawhid. Of Imam Khomeini, God's mercy upon him, the pure Muhammadan Islam is the only solution and remedy for the pains of the Islamic communities. The pure Islam brings about unity among all Muslims from any race, ethnicity, or language spoken. Imam Khomeini called the pure Muhammadan Islam is the Islam of the suffering poor, the Islam of the barefooted, the Islam of those who have been whipped during the bitter and shameful history of deprivation. It is the Islam that smashes modern capitalism and bloodthirsty communism. It is the obliterator of the Islam of luxury, the Islam of eclecticism, the Islam of compromise and abasement, and in short, the American Islam.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
IRIB English Radio presents Viewpoints.
Viewpoints.
With the presence of different scholars.
The presence of different scholars. IRIB English Radio.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear sisters and brothers from all around the world. Welcome back to IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Viewpoint. I am Beta, and once again, I have the honor to be at your service as the host of today's episode. And today with me are two dear guest speakers, Brother Ali and Brother Habib with me. Welcome, brothers. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah. Thank you for having us.
Thank you. You were looking at this concept actually somehow idealistically, okay? We're living in a world who we can see individualism everywhere, in families, in generations, and so on, okay? So the thing that you are telling me that we have to focus on the common thing is a bit far-fetched, okay? Mm-hmm. Because we are living in a world full of differences, okay? And we accepted these differences as something common, okay? We all have differences.
Uh-huh. It is not idealistic at all.
Why doesn't exist any unity?
Oh, okay, let me tell you. Because the enemy was very artistic. He focused on our mind and he changed our mindset that we see that, okay, whatever we have is differentiation. No, we have a lot in common. Almost 90% of the beliefs of, even 90 plus percent of beliefs of Muslims are in different areas are very similar to each other at least.
So
it means that when you have, you cannot find such a thing in any other religion. And that you have all these, unity-making elements. So why should we talk about, for example, differences? No, it is not idealistic at all.
Mean.
For example. Let me give you one example. You, as a Shia, need to prove yourself that you have only one Quran. This version of your Quran is the same book that is, for example, being read and recited in different countries.
Yeah.
But you, when you go outside of a country, you see, oh, too many people have another mindset about the Quran that you have. They say, okay, can you swear by God that you are reciting this Quran? You cannot believe it that in Islam world, some of the people think that we have another format of the Quran.
Yeah.
So you say, no, Quran is quite, there is no other version of Quran except the Quran that we have, but as Imam Saleh said, the one which is Bain al-Jildain. Right.
So I get your example, but let's have the opinion of Brother Habib to hear.
Yeah,
the thing is that I think that you kind of missed what he was trying to state about the meaning of wahda, when we say wahdat or unity. What he was trying to point out and prove was that we can coexist, and it is possible.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to be perfect. There are going to be differences, but that's normal. Mm. As you stated, that families between themselves, they also have their differences, but yet they still coexist together. These elements of unity that he was stating also play a part of us having one Quran. Of course, the different ways of narrations, recitations. In Africa, the 21 ways of reciting, the 7 famous ones, frequently reported ones, available as
but the differences are not too much. Yeah,
it's one Quran.
Yeah.
But the one message of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala sent by the same prophet that we all believe in, Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi, to face the same qibla that we all pray towards. And of course, the love of Ahlul Bayt alayhimus salam. No Muslim A true Muslim does not always has the love of Ahlul Bayt.
In different parts of the world, we have some figures who are really defending this concept. So it does not mean that, okay, we are alone. No. Governmentally speaking, yes, Iran is the only country. No, but if in the world of Islam, with the scholars, there are too many scholars in both. But definitely the Shia scholars are more in this way.
I mean, when you look at the Shia history, from the time where they were always the minorities, and the Imam alayhim salam would always advise them, even in the words of Amir al-Mu'mineen alayhi salam, we talked about this before the show, even in the words of Amir al-Mu'mineen alayhi salam, that they always advise to have unity, to always be with them as one. We even have the saying from Imam al-Kadhim alayhi salam, it's available in Al-Kafi, where he sees a man holding a fish. He says, why are you doing this? Throw away the fish. Do not make us an embarrassment in front of others. Mm-hmm. Always perfume, always wear your best clothes, always do your, you know, be in a good appearance. Why? Because they just want something on you. The thing is that we're opening our doors. But why aren't we receiving any, you know, guests over? You know, and we've been trying it, you know, the conference. I've been in the conference. I've seen the conference, Islamic Unity Conference placed. I've tried it. I've seen it. We said, why not? Let's see what good has. And the intentions are for the Shias are clear.
Mm-hmm. So this is exactly what the common enemy wants out from us, to reach to this point. Look, to give us this mindset that there is no way for unity between us.
Definitely, no, there is. No. Even this conference. There is a way.
Look, the functionality of this conference can be seen, I mean, tangibly. We can see the results of such conferences, at least one of...
I mean, it's been a stretch of like at least 20 years where they've been trying to put Muslims together and whatnot. But
definitely, 14 centuries, there was not such conferences. Now with innovation of, for example, Imam Khomeini...
Let me just wrap the things up to here. You know, here we have these things in common that it is possible to have unity in our Islamic Ummah, okay? But the problem, we are opening our doors, we are sharing this mindset that we want to be united with you. But, you know, they just don't want to do that. What should we do? After these long years, isn't it enough?
Put yourself in a it's very difficult, of course, to put yourself in the place of Imam Ali alayhi salam.
Yeah.
He knew that he was right. He knew it was true.
I know.
What was his stance at that time? He opened the door. He helped them, I mean, to the extent that he could. So this was the way that he acted. Let's go, I mean, down to Imam Sadr alayhi salam, the same way. Some of the leaders of other denominations were students of Imam Sadr alayhi salam. You see? He taught them. He had the right of their being as a teacher.
Yeah.
So, what was the stance of Imam Sadr alayhi salam? Did he say anything against them? Or did act against them? But he always helped them. I mean, he was opening his arms to welcome them, to answer their questions. And even the second caliph, he said, if it was not Ali, the second caliph was annihilated. Imam opened his arms. So, this is our duty. We do our duty. We are men of duty, not men of results.
But, brother, they're taking it for granted. You know, they are getting used to it.
But it shows its results. What is the result? The result will come up 25 years later that Ali becomes the leader of the Islamic Ummah.
So what is the line?
It does not mean that we are doing such a thing to, for example, conquer the world in the future. No, we are going. This is our duty. Okay. We do it for the sake of the Islam, to extent that we can.
Okay, thank you.
Brother. Yeah.
So, brother, how do we do
this? We do need the Islamic unity. We accept that. We all accept that, brother.
Okay.
We do accept the fact that we have been advised to do so. We are doing our part.
Excellent.
But what I'm trying to say here is that, you know, it's a two-way job. It's not only a one-way job.
Exactly.
You know, that's what I'm trying to say here, that we've been trying our best, but why aren't the other sects coming back to us? Can you please give us an analysis look on it? Like, why aren't the Hanafis coming? All right, yeah, the Shias are trying to put hands with each
Imam
other.
Imam Khomeini, rahmatullah alayhi, has a very famous statement. He says, we are missioned to our duty, not missioned to the result of what we are doing.
Nice.
We don't care what the result is going to be. You see? The same way that you say, okay, I'm living in a life with, for example, my wife. This is my duty to be kind. I have to see something from the other side. Suppose that there is no, I mean, sign from the other side. Suppose, I mean, I'm making just to make it tangible.
I know.
To make it tangible. Suppose that there, no good sign comes from the other side. So what is your duty? Your duty changes? You become harsh? You become wild to her?
No, but the thing is that you change your
method. You mean I do my duty, whatever is on me, I will do my duty, whatever is obligatory and mandatory on me. So I'm waiting. I did it for the sake of God. So I'm acting based on what Allah has put on my shoulder.
At the end of the day, there's not going to be any unity unless they
also... Alhamdulillah, there was. What you see in the world today, that the effect of this concept in the Islam world today is totally different with what was 40 years ago, Sheikh. You can go and see in different parts of the world.
I think that, sometime in the past, I think that technology played its role in understanding Shiism more. Otherwise, till this day, people who are far off from understanding the reality of Shiism are still stuck in that loophole of what Shiism are equivalent to worse than Jews. Still to this day. And I think that what really helped us out, and you saw it come less, is that we're out there more. We're on social media. Our websites are available, alhamdulillah, with the great struggle of our scholars. Our books are spread out. The ideologies of Shiism are spread out there, where you could understand what is Shiism from Shiism. The works of Allama Tabatabai played a big role in France and Europe as well. Don't forget about that. And the Sunnis know who Shias are. They understand what the Shias are. But yet still, they're scholars I'm talking. I'm not talking about the norm. But still, the norm are affected.
I want to say that this mindset that you are talking about, Sheikh, is not something quite widespread among the Muslims. It's I want to tell you, if anyone has been living among the Sunni brothers or Sunni communities, he easily can understand that this harsh viewpoint is among very, very, very few number of the Islamic Ummah that have been affected by the enemies. I can call them something like Wahhabi-oriented ones or Salafis or something like this. Not among... I can tell you... more than 80 or 90% of them have not such mindsets or are not that much, let's say, harsh towards Shiism. So our quarrel or discussion is for that minority that has been affected by the common enemy. And we are making, and we are defending this concept of Islamic unity to take these 20% of our brothers and sisters back from the enemy, right? I have been living among Ahl Sunnah, even in Iran, outside of Iran. So, I have been among them for quite a short period of time.
Yeah, Brother Ali, your defense was, I think, kind of perfect up to here. But all the questions that you asked about all these unity things that we open our doors and so on, they didn't answer. And the thing, I'm going to ask you, Brother Habib, at the last part of our episode, which you have 2 minutes to answer, is we have to focus on our duty. Do you agree with that? And our duty to make ourselves united.
Yes.
More and more. Okay.
Yes, I accept.
So what do you do as an individual here to make it more stronger, to make it something for them to accept it?
I accept the fact that, yes, we have to do our duty. We are living currently in a Shia state. And it kind of becomes easier for us to forget even like the fact of how the other Shias were living before, and how they were viewed to some extent. And for example, if I was living in America, in the United States, between a Sunni community, in a Sunni community, it is available. And or for example, I was living in Birmingham, England, full of Sunnis there. I would not show off that I'm a Shia. I would live with them like I'm another Muslim. I would pray in their masajid. I would do whatever. If the taqiyya reaches to a point where I have to do taktif, then I would do taktif.
Takattuf.
And then there's also this important factor of respecting them, being nice to them, even, you know, going to their funerals, their happy occasions, their sad occasions, being with them, living with them, coexisting with them all together. That's my duty. Coexisting.
I think this is exactly what unity means.
That's what we're talking about. But the fact is, the problem is that it has somehow become political.
I know.
The factor of becoming together, you feel that it's political on both sides.
Yeah, I do agree with you. Because Islam is political religion.
Yes.
Imam Ali was a political leader. At the same time, he was a religious leader.
We accept that.
Yeah.
We accept
definitely
that.
It's political.
But the thing is
whole religion is politics. The politics is, but this definition of politics differs with the politics in the Western
That's what I wanted to say.
Yeah.
That's what I wanted to say. The fact is that there's always that common enemy. So it's like the longing from the Shia sect for Islamic unity.
Mm-hmm.
If we didn't have a political place, will it still be there, or will we change our duties?
Look, we are men of actions, men of duties. We act based on our duties. It might long up to the Day of Judgment, right? So we're men of duties. We have been created to be a good servant of God, as the Holy Prophet was servant of God. So we do our actions and duties as a servant.
Thank you, Brother Ali and Brother Happy, for having your opinions with me and your point. And thank you, dear listeners, for listening to us. It was all the time we had for today's episode. I wish you farewell. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullahi.
You came to us with a heart so full of love, and you showed that you're the one who cares the most, and to us you've always been so close. Everyone will say, please save me, accept Allah. يقولها لنا يوم القيامة أمتي يقولها شفاعة أنا لها
Food for thought.
Hello everyone, and on the eve of the blessed birthday anniversary of Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, here is an interesting statement from him on the position of parents in Islam. One who follows the orders of Allah with regards to obeying parents shall have two doors of paradise opened up for him.
This is IRIB English Radio. Iranian news. Iranian culture. Iranian voice. www.parstoday.com/en.
The reality of Amazon.
Part 1.
If you observe the Earth from the space, you may not find all natural features that you studied in geography books, such as mountains, lakes, rivers, plains, etc. They don't look like the same as you imagined. You can't see the Mount Everest from that large distance, but there are features that can be seen easily from the space, like the Amazon River. The Amazon River is approximately 6,500 to 6,800 kilometers long and has an average discharge of about 215,000 to 230,000 cubed per second. The Amazon River sets the record in terms of the sheer volume of water. It is the largest rainforest ecosystem in the world. The jungles surrounding the Amazon River are considered the lungs of the planet. It is home to numerous different species. There are thousands of distinct creatures in the Amazon, and you can find everything there. There is also a large company that has been active for 25 years in Seattle, US, where you can find everything you need except houses, cars, cigarettes, and predatory animals. These are actually Jeff Bezos's red lines. He's the founder and CEO of Amazon, who had big dreams since he was a primary school student. He's one of the richest men in the world. In the 70s, when he was a primary school student, he wrote an essay and mentioned his dreams. Bezos stressed that Earth is the most precious planet and thought about moving off this planet. He thought of a gigantic ship that could be home to people. In that time, Bezos just wrote his dreams. But now he thinks seriously about that project. Jeff Bezos unveils his grand space plans in his conferences. He talks about his plan for colonizing the space. According to many, this plan is not practical and seems funny to them. It is as funny as one person became the richest person on Earth by selling his books. Jeff Bezos did the same thing and now owns the largest retail store in the world. In the beginning, he just sold books and nothing else. For many decades, bookstores did not pay attention to technological advances and the fundamental changes, and only used to sell books. They dealt with the return of the books and small sizes of the warehouses. People were also used to buy books in large cities. Bezos graduated from Princeton University in 1986 with degrees in electrical engineering and computer science. He worked on Wall Street in a variety of related fields afterwards. Then he thought about selling books online. He later said in an interview that when he realized in 1994 that the use of the internet had grown 23 times compared to the previous year, it was a better idea to invest in this industry. Most of the people didn't see this type of data useful at all. 2 years later, he sold the first book online.
We all know that a communications revolution is underway in this country.
What is the internet?
It's sort of the mother of all networks.
It's information highways.
It's kind of like your remote control to the world.
I came across the startling statistic that web usage was growing at 2,300% a year. So I decided I would try and find a business plan that made sense in the context of that growth. And I picked books as the first best product to sell online.
Soon, publishers and libraries welcomed Amazon's activities and started to sell and buy books online. Then, Amazon revenue increased day by day. In 1996, Amazon grew its revenue to $16 million. This company was founded with an investment of $300,000 by Jeff Bezos' Cuban stepfather. Net sales for fiscal 1997 were $147.8 million, an 838% increase over net sales of $15.7 million reported for fiscal 1996. This year, Amazon's book warehouses were the size of six football fields. At that time, people realized that a giant had stepped into the world of information technology. Jeff Bezos used a very simple method to earn money. He found an easy way to sell books. He owned large book warehouses. Amazon started to ask for small discounts from publishers to have the books and then sell them online. It didn't matter to Bezos where you lived. Wherever a person had access to the internet, there was a branch of Amazon and the book would reach him in the shortest possible time. Customers used to buy these books cheaper than other stores. The number of Amazon users increased for the same reason. Amazon served over 17 million customer accounts. Customers also used to buy DVDs and musical instruments as well. In fact, Bezos used the book as a drug. People in all around the world were addicted to Amazon and its books, and Bezos tried to come up with new items in his company. He used to tell his employees that this is just the beginning. In the beginning of the 21st century, Bezos began selling more products on Amazon. Amazon started to suggest new products to customers every time. Considering all these products, books were the most important products for people in that time. Amazon's revenue reached more than $2.7 billion of the new century. Amazon's revenue exceeded $3 billion. There were more than billion. Amazon moved its warehouses to other cities around the world. In this way, customers received their products in the shortest time.
Amazon could soon become the Walmart of the internet.
There were thousands of businesses eager to sell online. Bezos offered them a way to do it.
Amazon is transforming itself from an online bookstore to an online mall.
He transformed Amazon into a retail platform where anyone could sell their goods to his customers and invited thousands of other businesses to be a part of it.
It's the easiest place for anybody, small or large, who wants to set up shop online, to sell online, because they can access our 12 million plus customers. Anybody, all comers.
In 2003, Amazon launched Search Inside the Book. Users were allowed to search for the desired term in a book without purchasing it. Publishers cautiously agreed that Amazon would scan some books and turn them into searchable text. In fact, Bezos was promoting the digital book industry at that time. In that time, Apple controlled the music market with iPad and iTunes, and Bezos didn't want to lose his control over the book market.
Mm-hmm.
today's special.
Assalamu alaikum.
It's special for you. We present to you today. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, in the name of Allah. Salam. So welcome. You're listening to today's special from IRIB English Radio. And this program is broadcast from Iran. Our calendar. Monday, 16th of Rabiul Awwal, 1445 of the Islamic Lunar Hijri calendar, corresponding to the 10th of May, 1402 of the Islamic Solar Hijri calendar, and the 2nd of October, 2023 of the Christian Gregorian calendar. For today, chapter Al-Anfal, verse 46, and the important point of it.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. وأطيعوا الله ورسوله ولا تنازعوا فتفشلوا وتذهب ريحكم واصبروا إن الله مع الصابرين.
And obey Allah and His Messenger, and do not dispute and thus lose courage, and then your strength would depart. And be patient. Indeed, Allah is with the patient.
لا إله إلا الله لا إله إلا الله.
Bless your day with contemplation on the verses of the Holy Quran.
God introduces the Prophet as the axis of practical unity for Muslims. This axis includes all deeds and words of the Prophet, who, as the history of Islam testifies, prevented discord and created unity among Muslims in order to strengthen the political and social basis of the Ummah. The Prophet, after migrating to Medina from Mecca, entered into treaties and social contracts, which are among the most evident ways of fostering unity. By creating brotherhood among Muslims, the Holy Prophet turned the enemy of the days of paganism into blessings and mercy.
Imam As-Sadiq said, "You may not abuse the enemies of Allah in such a way that they listen to it, lest they should abuse Allah out of hostility without any knowledge. Verily, whoever abuses the friends, the awliya, of Allah, has indeed insulted and abused Allah. Who is more of a wrongdoer in Allah's eyes than the one who prepares ground for Allah or his friends to be abused?"
Using the power of unity to change lives. It is an obligatory duty on Muslims to strive for a single ummah in the same time that they are obligated on the basis of tawheed to worship one Allah, one God. A single unified ummah can only be actualized when the whole group follows one political, social, and ideological path and falls under the umbrella one law, one system of economics, and etc. Establishing such as ummah is a duty whose burden is shared by all Muslims.
Through unity, a lot can be achieved. Unity brings people together, creating love, harmony, and generosity between them. As believers, we can use unity as a platform to spread kindness to others, as well as an opportunity for our spiritual growth to become closer to Allah. So let's reflect on the virtue of unity, allowing us to spread sincere kindness to our family, friends, humanity. Through unity, a lot can be achieved. Unity brings people together, creating love, harmony, and generosity between them. As believers, we can use unity as a platform to spread kindness to others, as well as an opportunity for our spiritual growth to become closer to Allah. So let's reflect on the virtues of unity, allowing us to spread sincere kindness to our family, friends, humanity, and precarious world we inhabit.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of Allah, the Most Compassionate, the Most Merciful, may Allah's peace and blessings be upon the Holy Prophet of Islam, Muhammad, and his purified progeny. Today we are going to talk about the Holy Prophet of Islam's efforts towards Islamic unity. The Holy Prophet of Islam, sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, is not only revered as the last messenger of Islam, but also celebrated for his remarkable strategies in unifying the diverse and often fractious Arabian tribes into a cohesive and harmonious Muslim community. So we can even explore some of the key strategies employed by the Holy Prophet ﷺ to promote unity within the Islamic Ummah, one of which was establishing a strong sense of brotherhood, as we referred to a little bit. One of the Prophet's most impactful strategies was the cultivation of a profound sense of brotherhood among his followers. He emphasized that all Muslims were like one body. If one part was afflicted, the whole body responded with care and concern. This metaphor underscored the importance of mutual support and solidarity among Muslims, transcending tribal, ethnic, and social divisions. The establishment of brotherhood bonds, known as mu'akha in Islamic history, fostered a sense of belonging and responsibility towards fellow believers.
Special topics for a special program. You can listen today, now and here, IRIB English Radio.
May this moment last forever in your hearts, a day you'll always remember every part.
Today's special.
This feeling of love, just let it grow forever through your life. Bring beautiful years of joy between you till the end of time.
We look at unity as a strength. Unity gives power, strength, and courage in any particular community or group, and it becomes so much difficult for the external sources to crush, break, or harm an individual from the united community. People feel strong and secure in those societies and networks where there are less conflicts and more understanding. This leads to grow such societies faster, also helps to achieve something bigger and better in the world. Unity is the greatest blessing of Almighty Allah and the major element of success in every aspect of life. Muslims should try to ignore the little things of other Muslim brothers in order to avoid the conflicts. And if they face differences of opinions, then they should try to negotiate the issues among each other in a very decent way. Muslims should also pray along that may Allah save them from such disputes to have a peaceful life. Listen to a short part of the speech of Ayatollah Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, on unity. The message of Islam is the message of unity, security, and brotherhood. Imam Ali alayhi salam has an eternal quote about the whole of mankind. He says, every human you encounter is your brother, either in your faith or in creation. In any case, he is a fellow human. All humans should be united and loving towards one another. It is not about a specific group or community being united. Thus, Muslims are ordered to do good to even those who are different from you in faith and beliefs. God does not forbid you from dealing with kindness and justice with those polytheists who did not make war against you on account of religion and did not expel you from your homes. Indeed, Allah loves the just. Holy Quran, chapter 60, verse 8. This is the Islamic rationale. It is to say that if someone simply holds different views or ideologies, you can't punish them for that, and you are not one to judge them.
The most important factor that unites us, yes, it's our faith, but the most important factor that can unite humanity is oppression, that we repel oppression. Oppression is an enemy not to me only, to my family members only, it's an enemy to humanity. It's an enemy to every human being. The Imam alayhi salam teaches you that when it comes to rejecting oppression, this should unite all of humanity. Let's unite on this one point, that oppression is not good for us. It destroys our societies. Unite under the banner of justice. This is the best banner that can unite us. And you know, unfortunately, some Muslims throughout history, they've misunderstood the revolution of the Imam alayhi salam. They think the Imam, you know, rose against... I've seen some Muslims who believe that Imam al-Hussein rose against Sunnis, you know, because they're so ignorant and they've been misinformed. That's what they think. Yeah, he rose against the ruling established of the time because Yazid was a Sunni. First of all, Yazid was not a Sunni. Yazid was a corrupt person who represented no one on earth except Shaitan. That's number one. Number two, the Imam alayhi salam does not rise against a school of thought or, you know, a Muslim or a Sunni or a... The Imam alayhi salam rose against one thing, and that's oppression. That's injustice. And this should unite us. This should not disunite us. The message of Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam should unite every single Muslim. Because the Imam alayhi salam is pointing our attention to a common enemy. And that common enemy is injustice. So let's take the message of the Imam alayhi salam and see how we can unite under the banner of justice in our society. And then Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala will elevate our status.
Dear brothers and sisters, that was all for this episode of today's special. Be with us if you want to know more about Unity and Unity Week. Thank you and fi aman Allah.
Mustafa, anta nabiyul amin wa sayyidul mursalin rahmatan lil alamin jitta bil haqqil yaqin anta nabiyul amin wa sayyidul mursalin
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.